from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually to meet workforce demands and grow West Virginia's economy. Learn more at wvhepc.edu. The W. Page Pitt School of Journalism and Mass Communications at Marshall University, providing hands-on education in advertising, public relations, and journalism across all media platforms.
At the legislature today, senators take on new technology in a bill on the chamber floor, while delegates look for new ways to fund construction at the West Virginia Schools for the Deaf and Blind. We travel to Southern West Virginia to check in on the progress of Governor Earl Ray Tomlin's legacy project, and newly elected Secretary of State Mack Warner joins us to discuss his legislative priorities. Those stories and more coming up on the legislature today. Mara. Lawmakers will consider hundreds of bills this legislative session, brought to them by constituents, lobbying groups, and state agency heads. A few of those pieces of legislation will also be presented by the state's constitutional officers, one of whom joins me tonight. Mack Warner is the newly elected Secretary of State. He was elected in November and took office earlier this year. Mr. Secretary, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
We have to start with an item that's made some news lately, and that was the firing of 16 employees in the Secretary of State's office. Now, I know there's not a lot that can be said because there's litigation in place, but let's start there. What about these employees who were let go?
Well, we needed to take the office in a new direction. If you do the football analogy, if you bring in a new coach, if you still keep the offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator, and so forth, are things really going to change? And we needed to move the office in a new direction. The campaign had showed that there was quite a bit of dissatisfaction out there, especially among the county clerks, and that's the main constituent that you have as the Secretary of State in the elections process. So if there's a broken down system there, you've got to make some changes. So the people that we brought in are the people with experience to move in the direction that the voters wanted us to move, that I wanted to move. And some of those numbers are, there's some particulars there about some people moving on or retiring and those sorts of things. So I don't want to get locked into those numbers. But we have brought on a new team to include field representatives, and those field representatives are going to be working with the county clerks, are going to be working with businesses. The key is we're all doing it within the same budget. We haven't increased the budget one bit. So we're actually doing more with the same amount of people.
And that was something that the Senate Finance Committee asked you about, letting go 16 employees and bringing on 22 new ones, which includes those field reps who
correct.
Are out working with the county clerks directly, correct?
Correct. And what happened is some of the people that we brought on, even though they have quite a bit of experience, they actually came on at lower salaries than the other team that was in there before. And that freed up money that allowed us to then bring on these field reps, still working within the same budget.
So the field reps are something new, a new change you've made to the Office of Secretary of State. What other changes are you looking at making in these first, 40 days you've been in office or so?
We're moving at the speed of business. The focus on all government needs to be creating jobs, building the economy, building the tax base. And you do that by reaching out to the business community and moving at the speed that they are moving. So a couple examples. One, we've increased our business hours. We're open now at 7:30 in the morning. We had a former delegate, Larry Williams, opening up a new business. He came into our office, had signed up, and was walking out the door at 7:50 so he could get on to what he was doing during the normal business hours. We're staying open until 5 or even later if there's still people in the office using our services. So we are accommodating our schedule to fit the business schedule. A couple other things we're doing is we're increasing the ability for companies to register not just yearly but on a multi-year basis. So we have legislation in front of the legislature right now giving us authority to let a business renew for 3 years or 5 years if that's what their business formula works for them.
Now, one of the catches with that legislation, though, is how do you convince lawmakers to not take that money from you right away? Are you working on that?
We are. We're watching the if somebody pays those 5 years on the front end, that the legislature doesn't, in these hard budget times, come in and sweep that money from us because we still need to operate our office. Another example is the expediting the business licensing procedure. So if somebody has a house or a business closing and they need that form done this week to meet the banks and everybody's closing agenda or schedule, they could come in and ask for an expedited service. They would pay an additional fee for that service to move theirs to the front of the line. But we're asking the legislature to grant that. So these are being well received. I'm hopeful that legislation will get passed. But the key is listening to the businesses and accommodating our office to fit the business's needs. It's listening to the people, listening to the folks in our office, the people that have these years of experience are bringing ideas to us as to how to adapt and make our office more in line with what the businesses are asking for.
Now, the Secretary of State's office, of course, also handles the voter rolls and voter registration and the administering of elections. The legislature right now is looking at a rule that came as a compromise out of a voter ID bill last year to create automatic voter registration. Now, the legislature has been told by the DMV that they're worried about the cost of the program and also being able to administer it by January 1st, 2018, and are asking for more time. Have the county clerks also come to you with concerns?
The county clerks have, and the issue here is our office is either for it or neutral in this. We were ready to implement when the legislature tells us to implement, but the two key components of this are the DMV, which is where the people will be signing up for the automatic voter registration, but there involves a hardware and a software component of that, and even more importantly is the training of the DMV personnel to capture that information correctly, because right now there are problems with the registration process because some of the proper information that the clerks need isn't getting transmitted to them. A couple examples, one person signed their name with XOXOXO. Well, mm-hmm. County clerk doesn't want to use that as a proper signature for a voter registration. A 16-year-old girl registered to vote, and you have to be 18 to vote. So there's certain information that the clerks require. Another example was someone registered under using a business address, a nail salon address. Well, you can't send the voter information to if it's a nail salon? So these are the type examples that the clerks are bringing to me and saying, we've got to fix this on the front end before this becomes the clerk's problem. Those people leave DMV thinking they've registered to vote, then they show up at a precinct to vote. And if they've used a nail salon or a rural route, not a 911 address, they haven't been properly entered into the precinct booked. And so there's confusion that comes back on the clerks. The clerks simply want it done correctly the first time.
Okay. Secretary of State Mack Warner, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you for having me.
We go to Cabell County tonight, where we meet three more members of the West Virginia Legislature in this edition of Meet Your Lawmakers.
Mike Woeffel represents the state's 5th senatorial district. A Democrat, he's from Cabell County. Senator Woeffel was elected to the Senate in 2014. He's an attorney and a graduate of the West Virginia University College of Law. Chad Lovejoy is a first-term member of the House of Delegates, elected in 2016. He's from Cabell County and represents the state's 17th House district. The Democrat works as an attorney in Huntington and has served as an adjunct professor at Marshall University Community and Technical College. Matthew Rohrbach was elected to the House of Delegates in 2014 to represent the 17th District. He's a Republican from Cabell County. Delegate Rohrbach is a Marshall University graduate who also attended the university's medical school. He specializes in internal medicine.
The West Virginia Schools for the Deaf and Blind have asked lawmakers for years to find a way to fund construction and improvement projects on their ailing campus in the Eastern Panhandle. Liz McCormick reports delegates have advanced a bill to aid the school while also looking for ways to help higher education.
The West Virginia Schools for the Deaf and Blind, located in the Eastern Panhandle, have been around since 1870, starting out with just 25 deaf students and 5 blind. Over the years, enrollment increased and campus size grew to 79 acres with 16 major buildings. As time went on, the campus of the Schools for the Deaf and Blind fell into disrepair. Administrators at the schools say it would take roughly $1.5 million to take care of current construction and renovation needs. Unable to raise their own funds through bonds or levies to help pay for construction, repairs, or building upgrades like a county school system, the schools sought help from lawmakers. Those efforts over the past few years, though, have been unsuccessful, but members in the House are trying once again to help the schools find funding through House Bill 2123. Delegate Eric Nelson of Kanawha County is the House Finance Chair.
We had this bill the last 2 years. It passed out of this body unanimously. What this does is just allow the school and the deaf and the blind who reach out to needy children throughout this whole state to compete for some of the funds in the SBA or the school building authority that they issue annually to fund major improvements. I urge passage.
The first year, the bill was vetoed by then-Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, and last year, it was held up in the Senate's Finance Committee. But today, the bill was passed unanimously in the House. Delegate Ruth Rowan, a Republican from Hampshire County, is the lead sponsor of the bill. She says the battle has been worth it.
Because I know these children, and I know how much they need this. So they're worth fighting for.
House Bill 2542 was also taken up in the chamber. Its overall goal is to give West Virginia University, Marshall University, and the West Virginia School of Osteopathic Medicine more flexibility in staffing and setting pay scales. Smaller universities and colleges in the state would have to notify the Higher Education Policy Commission of their intent to do the same. The bill takes out the requirement that institutions have a recall list, essentially a list of laid-off workers who, if their job would become available, would receive a call asking if they want their job back. The recall list becomes optional under the legislation. Delegate Barbara Evans-Fleshauer, a Democrat from Monongalia County, spoke against the bill.
Without the guide of seniority, which, as I said, we all know what that means, it's going to be a lot harder to verify whether decisions about layoffs are fair. It's going to be a lot harder to know when someone doesn't get the right to recall at all, whether they say they could recall you, but we won't know because of seniority. They have lost that right. We won't know whether that person is going to be recalled or not.
Fleshauer is also concerned the bill would impact older employees with years of experience who might be paid more than some newer, younger employees. Without the protection of recall, if they were laid off, she says they would be seen as expendable. Newcomer Delegate Marshall Wilson, a Republican from Berkeley County, supported the bill and responded to Fleshauer's concern.
The thing is that when you are the most expensive employee around, the assumption is that you're that expensive because you're that valuable. If you maintain that value, once the company, once the organization has the resources to bring you back, they will bring you back because you're that valuable. They'll come out looking for you. Now, what we're talking about here is not removing anything from the schools other than a requirement that they perform this way. No one is saying they can't use seniority. All we're saying is we're not going to force them to.
Several Democrats, however, argued the bill would open the door to age discrimination. House Education Chair Paul Espinosa says employees would still have the protection from the Federal Civil Rights Act, Age and Discrimination in Employment Act, and Americans with Disabilities Act. House Bill 2542 passed 61-38 and moves across the rotunda to the Senate. For the legislature today, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
Senators will be voting on a bill tomorrow to regulate the use of drones in the state. The bill has been years in the making, according to its lead sponsor. Senators made some clarifying amendments to Senate Bill 9 today, which will be up for a vote in the chamber tomorrow. The bill sets a number of guidelines for both the personal and professional use of drones or unmanned aircraft. Senate Judiciary Chair Charles Trump says his chamber has actually been working on the legislation for several years. But last summer, the Federal Aviation Administration released its guidelines for drones.
But there's a good bit that the Federal Aviation Administration left to the states, basically unregulated, for the states to craft their own their own rules. And that's what this bill endeavors to do.
Among its many provisions, Senate Bill 9 lays out guidelines for the use of drones on personal property and sets penalties for publishing images taken with a drone without permission of the subject. It defines how news organizations can use the aircraft and says law enforcement must have a warrant to take pictures or video with a drone unless it's for public safety or search and rescue purposes. With so many groups interested in the bill, Trump says it became a much more complex piece of legislation than anticipated.
But I guess the bill is our effort to balance all those rights and interests with public safety and privacy in the operation of unmanned aircraft.
Trump says drone technology has advanced at an incredible pace in the past 2 years, and the bill is an attempt to keep up with the advancements. One of former Governor Earl Ray Tomlin's goals during his administration was to help revitalize the economy of southern West Virginia. And although it's a difficult task, one of his projects to do just that is just beginning to take shape, largely with the help of the West Virginia National Guard. Clark Davis takes us to the Rock Creek Development Park for this look at a long-term project to bring new investment to the area.
Space. That's one of the things companies look for when they consider locating in West Virginia. They want plenty of it before they'll commit to moving factories and warehouses to the state. But former Governor Earl Ray Tomlin says the lack of flat land is often a challenge for those working to diversify West Virginia's economy.
Because one of the things that we have found out from our Commerce and Development Office is, you know, we've lost a lot of potential investors coming in simply because we could not find the level ground or enough ground suitable to build the kind of factory that they wanted.
Tomlin says many times companies need as much as 50 to 100 acres to locate in the state. And before he left the governor's office, Tomlin made sure to find that much space for multiple companies. The Hobet mine site along Route 119 in Boone County boasts 12,000 acres of flat land. Tomlin says the former mine site could be used for both industrial and commercial development, helping to revitalize the region's economy. A project to create a suitable site for business development began under the Tomlin administration, and now Hobet is known as Rock Creek Development Park, which Tomlin told West Virginia Public Broadcasting in December is already attracting attention.
We got part of the utilities there now. I'm just sorry we can't get it complete before I leave, but we got it set in motion. It's moving along very well.
The Hobet site is still being mined, although at a much smaller scale than it once was. And the reclamation process is still underway. It's that process, though, that prepares the site for new tenants. Among those tenants will be the West Virginia National Guard. In a unique relationship that's worked in other areas of the state, the Guard will use some of the land for training, as well as a new maintenance facility and even agriculture projects aimed at helping veterans. Adjutant General James Hoyer leads the state's Guard.
It's really up to our imagination what it can be, and I think how we leverage that available land and space to create opportunities for Southern West Virginia that help us both diversify our economy as well as continue to enhance the opportunities that will still exist in hopefully a revitalized energy industry.
The Guard's use of the site will create a need to expand the infrastructure available there, including a more accessible route to the top of the mountain and additional water and sewer lines to support an increased amount of people working on the property. Once that infrastructure has been created, the Boone County site will be more attractive to new investors near a four-lane highway with direct access to Charleston and Yeager Airport. The West Virginia National Guard currently has training sites in the state at Camp Dawson near Kingwood, the St. Albans Readiness Center, and the Memorial Tunnel Training Complex near Gallagher, West Virginia, and a site at Camp Branch in Logan County, where they have a combat assault strip. The Guard hopes by adding Rock Creek to the list, the West Virginia network of training facilities will be more attractive to other military operations from outside the state that need a one-stop shop for training. The Guard is currently in the process of creating a maintenance shop at Rock Creek that will be able to service some of the Guard's vehicles and also those for other military branches.
We're going to be able to do some maintenance work that's also going to be tied to mobility training using what we call non-standard vehicles. So not necessarily tanks and Bradleys, but the non-standard vehicles that are used in a variety of the counterterrorism missions that go on around the globe.
But Hoyer believes the activity on the site won't start and end with the West Virginia National Guard.
The Guard believes that there's an opportunity to leverage the access and capability that we have to bring more of that national security and homeland security training to the state, generate an industrial base around that activity, and we think we can do it more cost effectively, more timely, and at the highest levels of quality, so that makes our nation more safe and creates jobs in West Virginia. Sounds like a winner to me.
Initially, the Guard will create 8 new positions at Rock Creek, but they say that number will likely increase in the future as more of their projects get underway. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Clark Davis in Boone County.
We'll take a special look at the State Museum coming up, but first, we meet some new and returning members of the 83rd West Virginia Legislature.
Chandler Swope is a first-term senator from Mercer County. He was elected in 2016 to represent the state's 6th senatorial district. A native of McDowell County, Swope is a Republican who owns a construction company and chairs the Senate Workforce Committee. He served as chairman of the board of the Bluefield Regional Medical Center from 2005 to 2009, but has not held public office. Kelly Sabonia is a Republican from Cabell County. She was elected to represent the 18th House District in 2002. Delegate Sabonia chairs the House Committee on Rulemaking Review. She served 2 terms on the Cabell County Commission and works as a realtor. Ken Hicks is a Democrat from Wayne County. He was elected to the House in 2014. Delegate Hicks represents the 19th House District. He's a graduate of Marshall University and practices law in Huntington. Robert Thompson is a first-term delegate from Wayne County. He also represents the 19th House District. Thompson is a Democrat and works as a teacher.
Across the Capitol complex from the Senate wing of the State House sits the West Virginia Culture Center. And in its basement, a $4 million project that was completed in 2009. The West Virginia Museum is a state-of-the-art facility that is free to the public and attracts thousands of visitors each year. Tonight, we learn a little bit more about that museum and its history from the man who keeps it up and running.
I'm Charles Morse. I'm the Director of Museums for the West Virginia Division of Culture and History. The West Virginia State Museum was founded in 1894, and it was part of the Capitol building that was down on the head of Capitol Street in Charleston. When you think of a museum, you think about education, exhibits, collections. We work with school groups all over the state. We have visitors from all over the world. And a lot of people think that the most important aspect is exhibition, but it's actually the collections and the preservation of that collection, because once you've damaged it, once you've done something, you know, that you shouldn't be doing, you don't have an opportunity sometimes to correct that. So the preservation, the conservation of these artifacts, the caring for them, the having them in the right environment, that is the most important thing that we do, and it's so important.
On this wall over here, these are original.
One of the things that you make sure is that when you do cataloging, you make sure that you not change the characteristics of an artifact. So when we did the redevelopment of the State Museum, today it's again state of the art. When this building opened in 1976, it was considered state of the art at the time as well. But that was 8-track players and that was slide presentations. Well, today there is so much technology and we've utilized all of that in our State Museum today. And you go in and it immerses you in the environment. You start off in the coal swamp, and it's the Devonian period. You have a show path that goes through, and it has primary artifacts, gives you a feel for the area and stuff. And then you have discovery rooms, and there are 26 discovery rooms that take you a little more in depth. You know, more artifacts, more information, more collections. And you go to the frontier period. You go through the Civil War. So it's just something for everybody. People say that when they leave this museum, that they understand what the state of West Virginia is about. We have people who come in that are connected to people that were here 150 years ago. You're telling the story of the state. West Virginia has such an incredible story to tell, and in some ways, the story is so great that it makes it easy for us.
Tomorrow on our show, the newly elected state auditor, J.B. McCuskey, joins us to discuss what lawmakers can do to improve the workings of his office this legislative session. We're also joined by the only independent member of the state legislature, Delegate Ruby Phillips. That's tomorrow on the broadcast. For now, this has been the Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us.
Support for the Legislature Today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually to meet workforce demands and grow West Virginia's economy. Learn more at wvhepc.edu. The W. Page Pitt School of Journalism and Mass Communications at Marshall University, providing hands-on education in advertising, public relations, and journalism across all media platforms. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.